Canto 12, Chapter 6. Maharaj Parikshit liberated and the Veda handed down in form. Sri Sutta said, after Maharaj Parikshit, the one protected by Vishnu, had heard what was said by the sage, the equal-minded seer of the Supreme Soul, the son of Vyasa, he approached his lotus feet, bowed his head down and said, with his hands folded, the following to him. The king said, with the great mercy shown by your goodness, full of compassion, I have attained perfection because you described directly to me the Lord without a beginning or end. It is no surprise at all for great souls absorbed in the infallible one to be of mercy with the ignorant conditioned souls who are tormented by distress. We thus heard from you this collection of classical stories in which the Supreme Lord Uttama Shloka is being described. My Lord, I do not fear Takshaka or any other living being, nor do I fear repeated death. I have entered the spirit of the Absolute revealed by you as Nirvana, as standing apart from everything material, and am now free from fear. Please allow me, O Brahmin, to resign my speech and other sensory functions to Adakshaja, so that I, with an absorbed mind having forsaken all sensual desires, can give up my life. With the help of you, who showed the all-auspicious supreme shelter of the Lord Almighty, I have become fixed in non-material knowledge and wisdom, and has my ignorance been eradicated. Sutta said, thus, having been addressed, the powerful saint, the son of Vyasa, gave him the permission. After the king, that god among the people, along with the renounced sages thereupon had paid his respects, the sage left. Parikshit, the saintly king, by the power of reason, thereupon fixed his mind on his soul, meditated on the supreme truth, and rested his breath. On the bank of the Ganges, sitting on Darbar grass laid to the east, the great yogi, facing the north, free from all attachment, in perfect realization of the Absolute Spirit, broke with all doubts and became as motionless as a tree. Dear scholars, when Takshaka, being triggered by the angered son of the Brahmin sage Samika, was on his way to kill the king, he encountered Kashyapa Muni. He was an expert in countering poison, but Takshaka satisfied him with valuables and persuaded him to return home. Thereupon he, able to assume any form desired, disguised himself as a Brahmin and bit the king. Before the eyes of all embodied souls, the body of the fully self-realized saint among the kings was consumed by the fire of the snake's poison and turned immediately to ashes. From every direction of the earth and the sky, a great cry of lamentation was heard from all amazed demigods, demons, human beings, and other creatures. The kettle drums of the demigods resounded, the Gandharvas and Apsaras sang, and the self-realized souls spoke words of praise and rained down a shower of flowers. When Janamejaya heard that his father had been bitten by Takshaka, he, most enraged, accordingly, together with the Brahmins, offered all the snakes of the world as oblations in a sacrificial ceremony. Takshaka, seeing the great serpents being burned in the blazing fire of the snake sacrifice, agitated by fear, went to Indra for shelter. King Janamejaya, not seeing Takshaka among them, said to the Brahmins, why has Takshaka, the lowest of all serpents, not been burned? They answered, O best of the kings, he is hiding, having approached Indra for shelter. The snake is protected by him and therefore did not end up in the fire. After the highly intelligent son of Parikshit heard these words, he said to the priests, dear scholars, why not make Takshaka fall into the fire along with Indra? Hearing that, the priests performed the ritual for offering Takshaka along with Indra. They prayed, O Takshaka, May you quickly fall into this fire here together with Indra and his host of demigods. Indra, who together with Takshaka and his Vimana was thrown from his position by the derogatory words of the Brahmins, became most disturbed. Brihaspati, the son of Angira, who saw him in his Vimana together with Takshaka fall from the sky, addressed the king. This snake bird does not deserve to be killed by you, O ruler of men. He, this king of the snakes, drank from the nectar of the gods and is therefore beyond any doubt free from aging and immortal. The life and death of a living being and his destination in a next life, O king, are solely the result of his karma, his own actions. No other agent is accountable for his happiness and distress. A living being, dying because of snakes, thieves, fire and lightning, hunger, thirst, disease, or other agents, O king, undergoes that because of his accumulated karma. For that reason, O king, this sacrifice should be stopped that is performed with the intent to harm others. People burning innocent snakes will have to suffer that fate themselves. Sutta said, thus being addressed, he said, so be it, and with respect for the words of the great sage, he ceased with the snake sacrifice and worshipped that master of speech, Brihaspati. It is this hard to discern great material illusion Mahamaya belonging to Vishnu that causes misfortune because of the interaction of the material qualities, the gunas. The souls who are part and parcel of him get bewildered by it always causing trouble and are consequently caught in material bodies. The directly visible illusory energy, wherein abiding one lacking in peace thinks in terms of deceit by blaming others, will not prevail when one constantly investigates what goes on in the soul. This is so because one therein, in that state, the transcendentalists speak about is not of the materialistic arguments that assume so many forms, nor because of it is of a mind full of decisions and doubts. In that transcendental consciousness, the living entity is not of worldly concerns or of their causes and the benefits achieved by them, nor is he therein of the I-awareness that is so strong in its being bound to the basic qualities. That is all excluded then. A wise soul should take pleasure in warding off the waves of worldly conditioning, as also anyone thus being entangled. The supreme refuge of Lord Vishnu is, by those who wish to give up everything inessential, designated as that what is neither this nor that. Rejecting the immorality of materialism and with their emotions directed at nothing else, they embrace in their hearts the not-that of the soul of him to which they hold on, deeply absorbed in meditation, in samadhi. Thus, not being corrupted by the I and mine that is based upon having a body and a home, they attain this supreme refuge of Lord Vishnu. Insulting words one should tolerate, and one should never disrespect anyone, nor should one identify with this material body or hold a grudge against whomever. I offer my obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, whose knowledge is always new and upon whose lotus feet meditating, I have assimilated this collection of wisdom, Samhita. Sri Shaunaka said, please tell us this, O gentle soul, Sutta, in what way have Pila and the other highly intelligent disciples of Vyasa, who constitute the Vedic authority, spoken about the Vedas, and how have they divided them? Sutta said, O Brahmin, Lord Brahma, the most elevated being, had his mind perfectly under control and heard in his heart the subtle transcendental sound of ta-pa that arose from the ether. One can hear that sound when one closes one's ears for sounds from the outside. By the worship of that sound, O Brahmin, yogis cleanse the contamination away from the heart that is known as the substance, the activity, and the doer, and find liberation from rebirth. From that sound, the threefold Omkara, A-U-M, came into being that, manifesting itself unseen, constitutes the representation of the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, the Absolute Truth, Brahman, and the Supersoul, Paramatma. One perceives this eternal, itself imperceptibly manifesting sound outside the physical sense of hearing and power of vision. The complete of the Vedic sound one employs is an elaboration of this Omkara that from the soul manifests itself in the ether. It constitutes the direct expression of the self-generating Absolute Truth and Supersoul. It constitutes the eternal seed of the Vedas and constitutes the secret of all mantras. O eminence of Bhrigu, the three sounds of the alphabet beginning with A that came into being, the sounds A, U and M, are fundamental to all the threefold forms of material existence, the modes, the gunas, the names of the three Vedas, the destinations, the three types of lokas, and the states of consciousness. The mighty unborn Lord Brahma created from it, that threefold sound, the different sounds of the total collection of vowels, sibilants, semivowels, and consonants, as they are known by their short and long forms. For the purpose of giving instruction on the four sacrifices, the Almighty One created with all these sounds from his four faces the four Vedas, along with his Omkara and Vyariti invocations of the names of the seven lokas. He taught them as a complete set to his sons, who were the great rishis among the Brahmins, most expert in the art of Vedic recitation, and they, in their turn, imparted them as instructors of Dharma, Acharyas, to their sons. Throughout the four yugas, generation after generation, one after the other disciple, fixed in his vows, received them, these Vedas, by disciplic succession, parampara. They were divided among the prominent sages at the end of Dwapara Yuga. The Brahmin sages, inspired by the infallible Lord situated in their hearts, came to that dividing among each other of the Vedas when they saw that under the influence of time the intelligence of the people diminished, the lifespan shortened, and the strength weakened. O Brahmin, in this period of Manu, Brahma and Shiva and other rulers over the worlds requested the Supreme Lord, the maintainer of the universe, to protect the principles of religion. O most fortunate soul, the Lord in the form of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa by Parashara begotten in the womb of Satyavati, then descended as a partial expansion of his plenary portion, Sankarsana, and divided the Veda in four. Like someone sorting out gems, he separated the groups of mantras in four categories of collections, Samhitas, the Rig, Atharva, Yajur, and Samaveda. The highly intelligent and mighty sage asked four of his disciples to approach him one by one, O Brahmin, to give each of them one of the four collections. He taught Paila the first collection, the Rig Veda, named Bhavricha, many verses. To Vaishampayana, he spoke the collection of Yajur mantras called Nigada, the recited. The Sama mantras titled Chandoga, singer in meter, he told Jaimini, and the Atharva mantras from the sages Atharva and Angira, he entrusted to his dear disciple Sumantu. Paila told his Samhita that he divided in two, to Indra Pramiti and Bhaskala. The latter one, O son of Bhrigu, Shaunaka, divided his collection in four parts he handed down to his disciples Bodhya, Yajnavalkya, Parashara, and Agnimitra. The self-controlled sage Indra Pramiti taught his collection to the learned seer, his son, Mandukya, and his disciple Devamitra taught it to Saubari and others. Shakalya, his son, divided his collection in five parts he gave to Vatsya, Mudgala, Shaliya, Gokalya, and Shishira. Sage Jatukarnya, also a disciple of his, added to the collection he received a glossary when he passed it down to Balaka, Paila, Jabala and Viraja. Bhaskali, the son of Bhaskala, assembled from the different branches of the Rig Veda, the collection called the Valakhilya Samhita, that was received by the Daitya sons Valayani, Bhajya, and Kashara. This is how those many collections of the Rig Veda verses were maintained by these Brahmin seers in disciplic succession. Anyone who hears about the distribution of these sacred verses is free from all sins. Some disciples of Vaishampayana were known as the Charakas, the ones vowed, because they, for their guru, executed a vow to atone for the sin of having killed a Brahmin. They became authorities on the Atharva Veda. Yajnavalkya, another disciple, said, "O Master, what value have the endeavors of these weak fellows? I will perform a most difficult penance." Thus being addressed, his spiritual master got angry and said, "Go away, enough of you, a disciple insulting scholars. Give immediately everything up that I taught you." The son of Devarata then regurgitated the collected Yajur mantras. After he had left, the sages greedily looked at these Yajur mantras and turned into partridges picking them up. These branches of the Yajurveda thus became known as the most beautiful Taittiriya Samhita, the partridge collection. O Brahmin, Yajnavalkya, looking for extra mantras unknown to his spiritual master, thereupon carefully worshipped the Lord of the Sun. Sri Yajnavalkya said, "My obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, appearing as the sun and just like the eater, in the form of the supersoul inside and in the form of time outside, is present in the hearts of the four kinds of living entities, beginning from Brahma down to the blades of grass, as born from wombs, eggs, moist and seed. You, who cannot be covered by material terms, all by yourself, with the flow of years made up of the tiny fragments of kshanas, lavas and nimeshas, carry out the maintenance of this universe by taking away and returning its water in the form of rain. O Lord of the Sun, O Glowing One, O Best among the Gods, by the rules of the sacred tradition, I daily meditate at the three junctures of the day with full attention on your glowing sphere, on you, the mighty controller, who burn all the sins, the consequent suffering, as also what led to them, of all souls offering prayers. You, who in this world are the Lord dwelling in the hearts of all the moving and non-moving living beings depending on your shelter, awaken and inspire their unconscious material mind, senses and different vital airs. This world was seized and swallowed by the horrible mouth of the python known as darkness and became unconscious like being dead. You alone, most magnanimous, mercifully casting your glance, awaken the sleeping souls with the gift of insight. At the beginning, halfway, and at the end of the day, you thus, day after day, engage the pious in the ultimate benefit known as one's own nature of delivering service in a spiritual existence, Swadharma. Like an earthly king, you, in the form of the sun, travel around everywhere, creating fear among the sinners, while the deities of the directions holding lotus flowers with folded palms offer their respects. Hoping for Yajur mantras not known to anyone else, I therefore with prayer approach your two lotus feet, O Lord, that are honored by the spiritual masters of the three worlds." Sutta said, "He, the Supreme Lord of the Sun, thus glorified being satisfied, assumed the form of a horse and presented to the sage the Yajur mantras that were never learned by any other mortal being. The mighty sage divided the hundreds of Yajur mantras in 15 branches that were accepted by the disciples Kanva, Madhyandina and others under the name Vajjanei, stemming from the manes of the horse. of Jaimini Rishi, the manager of the Samaveda, there was a son, Sumantu, as also a grandson, Sudvan. Each of them he told one half of the collection. Sukarma, another disciple of Jaimini and great thinker, divided the tree of the Samaveda into 1,000 collections of Sama mantras, after which, O Brahmin, the disciples Hiranyanabha, the son of Kushala, Paushanji, as also another one named Avantya, who was most advanced in spiritual realization, took charge of them. From Paushanji and Avantya, there were 500 disciples who are called the Samaveda singers of the north, or also, in later times, some of them, the singers of the south. Laugakshi, Mangali, Kuliya, Kushida, and Kukshi, 5 other disciples of Paushanji, each took care of 100 collections of mantras. Krita, a disciple of Hiranyanabha, communicated 24 samhitas to his disciples, and the remaining ones were handed down by the self-realized sage Avantya.